Oh yeah, we say that, so. All right, it is
5:05, and I would like to call this meeting to order. This is the American Rescue Plan Act Special Committee. It is October 12th. Welcome, everybody. And if I could get the clerk to read the roll.
Criswell.
Here.
Corcoran.
Yeah, here.
Levine.
Here.
Lopez. Absent. Sperry.
Present.
Thank you so much. And could I get a motion to approve the minutes and transcripts of the August 31 meeting and the minutes of the September 13 meeting, please?
Motion.
And a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes. All right. Moving on. Thank you. We have a couple resolutions to talk about, and then we have some old business to talk about. So we will just get right into it. Can I have a motion to discuss resolution number 497, please? Thank you. In a second. Yes, all in favor?
Aye.
Here we go. All right. So this is the home energy improvements and job training project. We all know the history of this. It was approved in economic development 6-0. It was approved in public works 5-0. The resolution was amended. The vendor name was to Communities for Local Power. It was adopted 3-0 in energy. It was postponed 1 week in Ways and Means by a vote of 4-0. And Director Doyle is going to speak on this. We already voted on this, just so you know. So we already scored this at 66%, with mission at 67%, equity distribution at 76%, community impact at 66%, and financial impact at 44%. And do I need to say anything more about this? You know the history of it, that it was originally proposed. So let's have Director Doyle talk to us about how this has now I was trying to get you to do this in economic development, and somehow it slid right by. So I'm hoping that you'll actually give us a little bit more detail right now.
Sure.
Thank you
to the committee and chair for giving me the opportunity to speak with respect to this. This came up quite a while ago when we were proposing a community development block grant fund that does housing rehabilitation using state and federal money. We applied for that funding. We received that funding. There's about $800,000. We're currently working through that right now. We have a sub-recipient, which is RUPCO. As part of that application, we sort of flagged the idea that when we look at the types of rehabilitation that we do on these houses for low and moderate income people, it doesn't really get into energy efficiency work in any meaningful way, because you're really just trying to do code compliance work. And the thought was, in the discussions that we had with all of the parties, which included Communities for Local Power, and if I get that wrong again, please correct me, the people from BOCES are individuals involved in the current rehab work, which is RUPCO as a sub-recipient, and then our Employment Office of Employment Training. The idea came around that we could really use additional money using ARPA funds to essentially do a program that included job training and Green New Deal issues at the same time that we were doing essentially work on individual houses for deep energy dives. We presented that to the legislature. I think the legislature came back and said to us, we'd really like the idea of providing additional resources and capacity with respect to Communities for Local Power. And they funded that for 3 years at $30,000 a year, if I remember correctly, for a total of $90,000 to fund that position at Communities of Local Power. They asked us to come back and say, well, what do we want to do with respect to the actual energy improvements that were necessary? So we rethought it and we said, look, we can make this work as more of a pilot program that we can go in and do these energy efficiency work, and we can start to capture how much it costs to do these on a typical home. We can look at whether or not what the energy saved was, and then we can start to think about, is there a way that in the future we can work with local banks, other philanthropy, that we can continue this program for low and moderate income people with less of a government subsidy. And thinking about this, one of the things that you should know is in Ithaca, New York, they've stood this program up in Ithaca, New York. they've had a hedge fund investor come in and essentially fund these low and moderate, these low interest loans. The community is committing marginal funds to essentially make them work, and they're proposing to do somewhere in a neighborhood of 1,000 houses, with the idea that, that what ends up happening is you're borrowing the money at a low interest rate and you're paying it back with the energy that you save, the cost of energy you save. Think of this as something like the solar contracts that you sign, where you sign a contract and you end up paying 10% less. That's the idea that that this does. And so we're going to try to essentially provide that necessary data and the necessary work that gets done back to the private sector to see if they'll step in. And then what we may end up doing is providing minimal government financing through other kinds of, back through the CDBG program or others, that we can continue this program for more houses. So that's a general thought here. The budget we're proposing, I believe, is about $400,000.
Correct.
We anticipate that we can use about $60,000, I think it's $60,000, or $100,000 from community development block grant funds, so that we can free that money up from code compliance and help us do some additional work with respect to energy assistance. And then there's a fee in there that essentially is the administrative fee for essentially RUPCO to do this work. And that administrative fee is currently their administrative fee to deliver the program, the Community Development Block Grant Program. So we just carry that percentage over to deliver this program as well.
And what's the time frame of this now?
So
workforce development that we funded was 3 years. For
right. I can tell you the Community Development Block Grant runs for 18 months. Mm-hmm. So they're currently working on that. And we hope that we're going to be able to get in on the tail end of some of those houses so that we can do that work with that are consistent with community development block grant funds that were coming in on the backside of that. I anticipate that we would be done no later than this time, probably next, not to 23, but spring of 24. So that I would anticipate that we'd be done by that time. I mean, in this day and age, you have all kinds of issues relative to supply chain issues, et cetera. But we're holding deadlines right now with respect to community development block grant funds. Yeah. And typical extensions are less than 6 months, usually what typical extensions are.
I like that this can be used as a pilot for potential other grant funding. I think that's really great to show evidence-based work when you're going to apply. So I was glad to hear you say that. Any committee members have any questions about this? Yes. Hello, Legislator Green.
Ex officio. I just want to add that the Inflation Reduction Act is loaded with funds, and you know that we could, I think, be more ready for if we do this both as a research and a workforce development project, and the New York State Climate Action Plan calls for hundreds of thousands of energy retrofits, not all in Ulster County, but statewide. They see energy efficiency as a real cornerstone to achieving the state's goals around emissions reduction.
That's great. I'd love for us to be able to see some periodic reports about how this is working, especially with the workforce development and the specific projects and how they are paired together. So that'd be great if we could see that once that's actually up and running.
As we can write this contract, and Nate will be critical on that, and we can make sure that there's a reporting function with it. And I neglected to thank Legislator. You've been a driving force behind this, and Joe, I'm really sorry, but I neglected to thank her for essentially kicking me in the butt to make sure that we continue to move this forward. So thank you very much.
My motto is that if I can't get in the front door, I try the back door. If the back door doesn't work, I'm willing to go down the chimney.
That's excellent. Is there anybody else in the room who has any questions about this? All right, I'd like to call for a vote.
Is it enough money? I mean, you're looking at doing 25 to 30 houses, and it's $20,000 to $25,000 each, which ends up closer to almost 600,000 and it's only 400. So what, I mean, are we going to be looking for additional funds?
So I think we have an opportunity, you know, as projects sort of shake out and the funds become more clear as we're spending ARPA money, we can, I think we are going to have, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but we've talked about the potential for some money to free up a little bit, so we can look at projects like this and say, how's it going? Is it what we thought it was going to be? Should we put some additional funds to it? So I think I appreciate that, and I want to say, like, let's put a pause in that and see, get it up and running and get it started and see how it's going, and then, you know, maybe we could find some other funding. But I appreciate what you're saying for sure.
If I may, mm-hmm. it also seems to me that doing some is better than doing none, and that if we see after 10 projects that we can't do 20 or 25 projects, mm-hmm. we could do fewer and still gather data and be in a good position to capture future funding.
Yep, I think that sounds right. All right, I'd like to call it for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right, passes. Thank you. Thank you very much for your work on it. Thank you, Legislature. All right, on to Resolution 498. Do I have a motion for discussion, please?
Motion for discussion.
And a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All righty, so this is approving the execution of a contract for $221,430 entered into by County with Legal Services of the Hudson Valley, and I believe that Legislator Uchitel is going to be talking to us about this tonight.
Sure. So this was an RFP that we sent out with the understanding that there are potentially very few respondents for the RFP to provide legal services for folks that are facing eviction. We did get the one respondent that we were anticipating would be the only respondent, and that is Legal Services of the Hudson Valley. They have been doing this type of work for a long time, but they have been limited by their resources. They don't have the resources to hire additional attorneys, and that is what would be needed. And with this with this contract, they would be able to do that. I think this is actually less than I was expecting it to come in at for the number of households they're going to be able to serve here, so I'm encouraged by that. And I would love for us to be able to fund this through ARPA. I think it's worthwhile. This is exactly the type of pilot program that I think ARPA would be very appropriate for, and I really appreciate this committee considering that.
Can you tell us a little bit about numbers served? What's the anticipation?
I believe it's 75, yeah. And
so in their RFP, they said 45% of the cases that they're currently handling have to do with eviction. And in the cases that they've handled, 70 to 90% have been prevented.
And do we have any idea about the geographic spread for this program? I'm assuming there'll be a heavier concentration for Kingston based, but I'm concerned that we're serving all of Ulster County with this program.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to be geographically limited in any way. And I'm sure we can ask. Oh, actually, I know from they submitted as part of the RFP response sample reports, and I believe one of the sheets that they're going to be reporting out includes a municipality. So we'll be able to see that for the households that they serve. And I don't, you know, I think, honestly, I represent Kingston, but I have developed a bit of a reputation on being outspoken on tenant issues. And as a result, I get phone calls from people all over the county. So I can tell you that there are tenants facing eviction all over the county. I always encourage them to also call their representatives as well, not just me. If I'm getting phone calls from outside of Kingston, I'm pretty confident that this will go to serve folks all over.
Can you, I'll get to you in 1 second. Can you tell us a little bit about the advertising of this program? Because it seems like it's almost too late before people know about programs like this. So how are you going to sort of front load the conversation for people to understand that the service is available and to, Yeah.
That is one of the conversations that we had when we were scoring these. Our thinking is that we would like them to submit basically an outreach plan
mm-hmm.
for how they do it. I mean, I will say that they get a lot of referrals from people. I refer people to them. I encourage everyone to refer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you get phone calls, and I suspect their docket is pretty full just on the referrals that they have.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to your earlier point, the outreach is a way to ensure that it's equitable.
Right.
And I would be very supportive, and I'm pretty confident that they would be willing to submit a advertising plan or a promotion plan, you know, once the contract is awarded to them.
And also that it's language inclusive, so in Spanish as well as English.
Yeah, and I know that they deal with that pretty heavily already, so I'm confident that the service is going to be inclusive in that way.
Okay. Deputy Executive Kelly?
What department is envisioned to manage all of that?
If I may?
Yeah.
So the conversation that we had when we met on Friday was that it would report to DSS.
Mm-hmm. Committee members, other questions on this?
Oh, and Mike Iaposi was here for that, so he was part of the conversation.
So the history of this is that it was passed in Health and Human Services 6-1. It was postponed in Ways and Means for 1 week. We have not scored it yet, and so I want to stay consistent with how we do our business, and so I'd like to actually send this out to scoring. Are we anticipating that it's going to come up for a full vote this week?
We would very much like it to. If it advances from this committee, it is likely, I believe, based on the discussion yesterday, it is likely to advance out of Ways and Means.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that this is one of the instances where, you know, a month delayed is a month of evictions that we
right. That's I feel that this is timely as well. So I think we have to make a decision, because if we don't vote on it tonight and score it and bring it back, we'd have to come back for a special session to vote on it. So I'd love your opinions on this.
Can we vote and then score?
We can certainly do that.
Just so that we have the scale of where we fell with that.
Uh-huh.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
Legislative. You know, my only question would be on this in regards to what's preventing us from on Tuesday call, you know, before you know, seeing if we can squeeze in you know, score it, and then if we have just call a special meeting of the committee right before Ways and Means to advance it, if we so choose to do so, and you know, be able to score it and then have the meeting on Tuesday, since we'll be here.
Do you have an opinion?
I'm okay to put in for a vote. We've been over this health for quite some time. We spent some time on it, so I'm okay without scoring it and moving it forward tonight for a vote.
Yes.
I think one compromise you could consider is moving it forward, scoring it, and I suspect, considering the fact that Ways and Means deferred to this committee, despite, you know, it probably had the votes last night to advance, I would say that if you score it and the scoring produces some other outcome, that, you know, you could ask Ways and Means to refer it back. They do have that power, and I suspect that they would respect the scoring outcome if the scoring outcome was adverse. And, you know, I would also, if it came to it, consider referring it back from the floor if it somehow advanced. I mean, as I say that, I can't fathom myself doing that. I think that you could have that out of not scoring it until later, and voting it forward, scoring it later, and if there's a problem with the scoring outcome, then you could ask for it to be referred.
Right.
I will also just add that, you know, if you were to do this, like, Ways and Means is going to defer to you. So if you don't advance it from this committee, and even if they don't, you know, your meeting, if you have a special meeting, would have to happen at like 4:30
right.
on Tuesday in order for it to pass prior to Ways and Means, which
right.
would start at 5.
Right.
And there might also be another meeting. There might be an audit committee meeting then, which we would have to be cognizant of. I don't know if we...
non-scheduled at this point.
Okay, all right. So
yeah,
even at 4:30 would be probably the time you'd have to do that. If it came to it. It's a little bit close.
So what's the will of the committee? I could go either way. After your vote, wait.
I'd like to vote and then score.
Vote.
Okay, so we're going to vote on it, then we'll score it, so we keep consistent, at least we have scoring, and if there is a problem, we can address it with Ways and Means before the Ways and Means Committee meeting. Does that sound fine?
It's a fair compromise in my eyes.
Okay, great. So, all right, so all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. Thank you for putting this together. I think it's really important.
Thank you. Well, really, Eva Walter deserves the bulk of the credit here, and she really, this came out of, you know, some of our initial conversations with the housing working groups, and then she really took the bull by the horns and got this going, so she deserves the accolades.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think we've agreed that housing is a crisis, and it's a lot on a lot of different levels, not just that we don't have it, but that what we have is being abused in some, in a lot of ways, and so we want to make sure that we can address that. Thank you. All right. Moving on, so
Mr. Chairman, very quick. So we should be expecting a rubric, or
yes, okay. Amber will send that out,
thank
and
you.
We'll have to get it back pretty quickly. So,
thank you.
Thank
Is
you
it possible
very much.
That you could copy me on the results from that?
Absolutely,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And they'll go out with Ways and Means meeting materials.
Okay, yes. Fantastic.
I'm going to switch old business and new business because folks are here to report out on old business, so I'm going to do new business if nobody minds. If everybody could look, whoever got it, the tracker, I just want to make sure that everybody's clear on what we've got left here, and you can see that the ARPA funding reduced by the current allocations is $6.2 million left.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, please.
Send them on down.
Trackers for everybody.
Trackers.
Hi, Charles.
So, we have some guests here. Hi. How are you tonight?
Good,
nice to
how
see
are you?
Great to see you. Hi.
My name is
Dawson. I was just going to say, if you want to introduce yourself.
Thank you so much.
Great. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Martin Dunkley. Founder of Season Gives. I'm actually co-founder of Season Gives. Also, co-founder of Season Delicious Foods.
Great. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And I think everybody else knows. That's why I didn't do introductions at first. I think we all pretty much know each other here. So, all right, great. This tracker, which has been this great document that's been ongoing, if you're looking at the proposed allocations that we're talking about this evening, if everything passes there, then we are down to $1.6 million. And as Chair Bartel said last night, you know, we're getting to the end of the funding here, so we really need to be thinking wisely about what our next moves are in terms of what we're funding. Anybody from the ARPA team want to talk about money reporting or anything of that nature? You know, where we're at with things.
I can say a little bit. The Treasury portal is open, so we have worked up a draft for our report for October 31st, which is for the third quarter. So that's the 3 months prior to October. That we will have that in on time, and it'll go out. We also, just for transparency, Molly was a big help. We've got the website up and running. So as an update, we did have a website out there for the. This is on the Ulster County website, and we have our own pages there. And it's, you know, so it'll be a good public information for people and hopefully a resource for the county.
Great, thank you. I saw that went out this afternoon, so I hope everybody on the committee gets a chance to take a look at that. And if there's any questions, next meeting we can talk about, you know, if we need clarity on anything or council can. So, all right. We're going to talk now about can we talk about the Main Streets program first? And can you just give us a little bit of an update on sort of where we're at with compromise language and conversation?
So my recollection is that this was scored and passed through this committee.
Correct.
And then last month we brought it through Economic Development and reached Ways and Means, where there were some questions, concerns about involvement of local municipalities in selection of projects that would be awarded fundings through the Main Streets program, recognizing that ultimately the program is aimed at supporting kind of community-based efforts in those downtown commercial cores, and so it should reflect some input from the local municipalities, which makes a ton of sense. So we've worked on a revision to the guidelines that would ultimately require any project that submits an application to include an endorsement from their host municipality that would indicate that municipality's support for the project, as a way to reflect that involvement of the local municipality. So we'll be discussing that with Ways and Means next week, and ultimately hope that that'll meet with their approval and then work its way through to the floor for the next meeting.
Just, would you anticipate, so for project that would be encompassing one of the villages, would you be expecting a letter of support from both the village government and the town as well, or just the village government?
Right. We would probably accept from either, but ultimately in a village we'd look ideally for an endorsement from the village government. You know, I think we have plenty of hamlets that don't have a village, and so we'd look to the town for submission of endorsement letters in those areas.
If you're going to submit something to Ways and Means, can you also have that submitted
sure.
to this committee so that we can be up on that conversation?
Sure.
So, okay. Any other questions about this? Hi.
Is it okay for me to ask?
Absolutely.
I'm not part of that committee.
Feel free.
My question is, and Tim, I'm sorry. Can you just give a little synopsis of what the Main Street programs are? Because
I can share. We have a presentation that we worked up that describes it. But basically, this is a request to allocate $2 million of ARPA funds to support downtown revitalization projects. So these are anchor institutions. The example that we've used before is that several years ago, UPAC was successful in applying to a similar program that exists at the state level. And so UPAC, as an anchor institution in Midtown Kingston, got some funding for air conditioning in their building, and then also some funding for street improvements along Cornell Street in Kingston. And so that's an example of the two categories that we've created in this program as well. Anchor institutions can apply for physical capital improvements to their building or facility, and then communities, sometimes a business district or a business association, can apply for projects in the downtown area. So signage
so
and wayfinding.
Midtown could
certainly be one. You know, we know that RUPCO actually has applied for a New York State Main Streets program for the Broadway corridor, so there may be a sense that if they're successful there, that they don't also need this funding, and
then
we'd focus on other rural parts of the county that still have commercial cores and may not traditionally be eligible for some of those state programs.
Perfect. Thank you.
Part of the goal is to actually spread this money as far wide in the county as possible, and so we always have that as a piece of the conversation whenever we're talking about it.
Thank
Legislator
you.
Petit?
Thank you. I think what's bothering me most is the definition of anchor businesses, and it has it defined as it's more than 10% of the business area, so it's a large business, or it's tourism, medical offices, etc. And I'm thinking medical offices, and I think it even had not-for-profits or multifamily dwellings in there. That doesn't sit well with me as far as being a true business. So is there another way around what you're defining as anchor businesses, so it doesn't go to, again, the usual suspects, and it can hit, you know, I'm thinking Port Ewan or even Milton. I think we had joint Main Street studies before, but we have all these little tiny businesses that are really struggling, especially now with 9W being all ripped up. You can't even get anywhere. You know, how I just the definition is getting to me. It's not the concept of the grant fund, but the definition of it.
Yeah, I hear that. I think I would say that's one of the rationales behind asking for the local municipal endorsement, because ultimately we want to allow the local municipality to help us understand what are the core anchor institutions in those downtown areas. Because they're, you know, sometimes they can be a medical facility. We saw this in the Boyceville Hamlet, actually, where that medical facility is now gone, and that's a major loss for that commercial core there. And so there could be a case where there's a medical office that provides service to the local community that draws people to that commercial core. They then stop, they shop at a grocery store, they go out and get lunch, all that kind of stuff. So those can be cores. But I hear you that we want to rely on local intelligence rather than, you know, have somebody that's kind of the usual suspect.
And a multifamily dwelling, I just had a thought when you said that, that's really the mixed use that you're looking at now. Okay.
And it was specifically worded as new residential properties that draw additional residents to a downtown area.
Okay.
That's where that one tries to fit in.
And this will be an application process.
Yes.
As the other ones. Will there also be, I can't remember if we decided, is there, who's going to be looking at those applications? Will it be a
similar model, a good compromise and approach that involves a couple of legislative appointees, a couple of executive appointees to review those. And again, you know, a threshold question for eligibility will be, did you get a municipal endorsement? So ones that didn't will not be reviewed and scored. They will be considered non-compliant, whereas those that did then would get reviewed and scored.
Great. Thank you very much. Any other questions for Dr. Wiedemann? Thank you very much for that. Appreciate that. All right, let's move on to the Agricultural Crisis Relief Program, which has been through a lot, some transformation itself. Who has the latest update of where it's at? And actually, for context, for folks who don't know it, if we could just give like a little context of what the program is.
I was just going to say, I know like the final piece of the discussion was kind of
surrounding. So just the general flavor of it is that we're trying to support local farmers, and we're trying to give them cash grants or cash support to help them through this crisis period and to help them give them equipment needs or whatever the needs are that they are expressing that they've taken hits during COVID and during the pandemic. So we're trying to support them in that way.
Yeah, and I think through micro grants and other efforts that they have access to funds in kind of a lightweight way, where there's not going to be a heavy bureaucratic process for them to access funds. The last part of the conversation has centered around how to classify the position. So we had a discussion 2.5 weeks ago, probably, with the sponsor, Kathy, with the chair, Dennis, myself, and Tim, and I think that Kathy's just about there.
So we've moved away from the, it went from a full position to then, it went to a consultant for a year, and then second year is a full position, and now it looks like it's back in full position. It's just done a whole switch.
And I think that that's kind of like, I have to check my emails again to see like the latest landing spot, but that's where it was. Is this going to be a contract, even though I think that a lot of people that have been interested in this program have shared a desire for a long-term higher level of participation, so that would lend itself more to a position. So
my question was that if it's going to move out of being a contractor position, it will go into the budget, and that will no longer be the ARPA funds.
No, it's still ARPA.
Will still be ARPA.
Yeah,
okay. There was some confusion last night about that.
It'll just have a sunset to it, and then we have to make the consideration annually as to whether to continue funding.
Got it. Okay.
So, and that's it. It was really, it's almost semantics at this point, because the idea and what the person needs to do has actually been kind of finally grounded, I think. Now it's just more about, if it is a position, where does it reside properly? We've talked about planning seems to be the most logical, since he already has a planner that works in this space, so this would be in addition to. I'll follow up with Kathy, but it was very close, and she took a lot of the feedback from the Ways and Means Committee in order to tailor the program better.
Got it. So. And this committee has voted on it. It's out of this committee.
For quite a while.
So I just wanted to make sure that the committee was aware of all the transformation that has taken place in this. So, yeah, Legislator Levine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question to the executive's office. In regards to some of the, I wasn't privy to some of the discussions that were going on in Ways and Means regarding the resolution, but is it still the intention of the sponsor to be that this is going to be like a universal payment to farmers and not necessarily, I know it was kind of discussed within caucus yesterday in terms of some members were comfortable with a universal program, and kind of it was almost like they were advocating for like a means test for some of the farmers.
So the discussion moved towards not being so specific in the resolution, but finding a way to qualify the individuals, and there's multiple methods by which you can do that. There was concerns that, and Dennis, correct me, but I know you're in the same room, is there are multiple ways to qualify the farmers in order to meet the income, or there was concerns about hobbyists coming forward with, like, asking for funds, those types of things. So just the basic tenets of a program will require us to qualify them. But doing it in such a way where the farmer's not taken from their work and not put through additional burdens. So is it a tax statement or something that they've already prepared for other purposes? that we can then use for our purposes to qualify. And that was part of the 250, I think, the micro grants, the $3,000 grants, and then there are additional funds as part of the program that they'd be eligible for.
And I guess what I'm hoping for is that our first move is to find the right person and get that person to coordinate with other smart folks and figure out these sort of micro details as we move forward. I think that would be
part
my
of our struggle was just to say, is it somebody that, you know, do we consult with hire an organization to consult on the program and help design it, or is that just shortchanging what is a long-term intention? That's the crux of it.
Right, exactly. Mr. Dunkley?
So how are we making, I mean, it obviously has to be qualifiers, right? But mm-hmm. how are we making sure that of everything that we need in order to move forward with funding and with the help that's needed, especially for farmers, how are we making sure that those very same qualifiers are not automatically removing those who are truly in need?
I think that's the intent. I guess, like, to answer it is, we're not there in terms of a program design because the funding hasn't been appropriated, and partially it's to bring in some expertise to help us do that.
Expertise is that?
To know the farming and agricultural community. That's not something that we have a planner that works in the space. We have the Soil and Water District, but I think that tapping into that community in order to bring that in to help design the program, like if I did it, I know that I'm just going to miss. So that's part of the design of the program. That's why we've been trying to be so specific about who, what organization, is it internal, what are we looking for? That's part of it.
I think, just to my experience, right, I think that it's very important to make sure that there's, you know, I've heard the word inclusive mentioned at this table multiple times, right? And we want to make sure that representation in all facets of wherever we're looking at, representation is there. Because mm-hmm. I think that unmaliciously, right, a lot of times if you don't know, you don't know. But having what I've seen, especially with individuals that I've helped for farming, you know, I'm a part of Black Farmers United, right? And there's a lot of things that's happening even in that set that automatically they might be disqualified for because they're not even represented or they're not even acknowledged, right? And we just want to make sure that when we're speaking of the word inclusive, that we make sure that the right people's at the table to even bring to light what some of us may not even be aware that exists, right? Even like representation at this table, right? It's we don't have full representation even at this table as we speak. So what I'm saying is that it's very important that if we're talking about it being inclusive and we're talking about qualifying, we just want to make sure that we're fair and we make sure that we're covering every aspect to make sure that this, you know, the funding gets to where it needs to get and it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't go into the same old hands. Right?
Great. Okay, thank you very much. Legislator Ushitel and then Legislator Petit.
I just want to piggyback on what Martin is saying. Specifically, I would love to, once we get to it, when it's actually in place, I don't think we should wait on it to vote on it, but I would love to hear from whoever ends up being hired or whatever the process is, what their process is going to be for qualifying people. I know, just to speak on my own experience with means testing, and I know this is different because these are individuals and this is, as a farmer, you're in a business, so you're going to have a little bit more paperwork to show. But it's for individuals, like if means testing means showing that you're low income, it's actually really hard to show that you're low income.
Right.
Like a lot of people that are low income don't have the paperwork that you would even need to prove that you're low income, and you end up not being able to help them because, you know, it's hard to ask someone a household income when they're sleeping on someone's couch,
right,
for example. And so I think it's a really good point, and I would love for the group that's administering this to let us know how they approach it when that time comes.
So, Director Doyle, this is going to be under your auspices.
We have to let the sponsor speak to the questions. We're not the sponsors.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just saying it's going to be under, ultimately will be under your auspices.
But I would say that, you know, the criteria is an important piece of
of trying to figure out how the program works with respect to the funding that's dedicated to go to the farmers directly and to the inclusiveness program. I think the difficulty that you face and that you want to make sure that you can address is not the farmers that have essentially faced the issues as it relates to increased costs, which may or may not be an eligible criteria in terms of funding, or the farmers that essentially have experienced an actual loss, which also may be ineligible. But those farmers that are just starting out, the innovation farmers, those ones that are essentially to get their foot in the ground, so to speak, to make sure that you find some money with respect to those farmers that are up and coming. And it's not just cash, by the way. You want to also try to think about combining this with the educational programs that are out there from other sources, whether it be soil and water conservation, or whether it be Cornell, or the Mid-Hudson Agribusiness Development Corporation. And in full disclosure, I sit on their board.
Thank you.
Awesome. This, what a conversation. I love it.
Great.
I wanted to piggyback on Martin's, but I'll put it actually refrain from that because you did such a good job. And you are amazing. You get it. You get it. And Dennis, I appreciate and respect your response on that because it is much more than cash.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Inclusive is my thing, so thank you.
Great. Good conversation. All right. Moving on. I think that was the old business. And we did have something in new business. So we were talking about community kitchens, and I wanted to get an update on where we were at because that was one of the things that we really wanted to fund. So Deputy Executive Kelly, do you have an update on the community kitchens? Yeah.
So we received a proposal from Community Action for Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're first doing, since this was really an initiative of the chair of the legislature, we're setting up a meeting for Doug and the ARPA team to discuss it in depth with her before bringing something forward. But the other part of it is we have a proposal for Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal of the chair is to have one southern located.
Right.
So I think that we can learn from this proposal and see how we can extrapolate that down to another part of the county. When we went to the ARPA staff went and visited Ellenville, at least on the legislative side, there didn't seem to be a burning desire to locate there. I think we can reach out to the village and other elected officials, but I don't know if Marlboro is interested in this type of thing or other parts, because we do need to be a bit geographically diverse here. I don't know if New Paltz or other areas also would have interest, but to get further down there and not just be Kingston-centric with this kind of effort, I think is vital. And that's what the chair shared with me this afternoon.
Great. I would love to see this move forward because, as I said earlier, the funds are dwindling, and so we just want to make sure that we get this in and get this through the process if we can. So that's great. All right. I wanted to mention just a couple of the other priorities that we haven't funded yet that, you know, if we're going to fund them, we got to get some resolutions together and pull together. So we talked about the potential of a meat processing facility. We talked about some workforce development programs, one related to film, one related to healthcare, such as nursing and EMT. We talked about bus shelters. The legal services is moving forward, so that's good. We talked about further support for farmers and for food security for residents by purchasing CSAs. We talked about housing for farmers. We talked about competitive housing programs. So we still have a lot on our kind of wish list here. So I think what I'd like to do is take time at the next meeting because my guess is that we won't have many resolutions. Maybe we'll have a resolution in front of us. So I'd love to take time during the next meeting to actually talk through these ideas. And, you know, again, I'm going to put a call out to all legislators to say, like, last call, you know, if you really have ideas, this is the moment to do it, because 1.6 million is going to go very fast at this point. Yes, Comptroller Gallagher.
Can you please add broadband to your list? Because, our commission has been working. I sent you and the chairwoman a message a while ago, and we're now down to about 600 unserved addresses in Ulster County, mm-hmm. and I thought I was going to have to, like, issue an RFP to get a price out of Spectrum, but they just sent me a note, and they were like, what if we just gave you pricing? And I was like,
I got an RFP for research.
Okay, so I'm not certain they're going to do it, but we may be able to get a number, and even if it's too big for ARPA, maybe there's a piece that could be carved out.
Right.
You know, I know there's going to be broadband money coming through the infrastructure bill,
right.
So I'm not suggesting that you use the lion's share, but maybe there's something that you want to do there.
Thank you, and I think that's the other thing we have to discuss is, do we want to try and take this last bit of money and break it up over several smaller projects, or do we want to try and fund one large thing, one last hurrah kind of feel? So I think that will be the gist of our next meeting. So
I have a really quick question.
Sure.
Sorry, guys.
No worries.
Youth programming for mental health. That's a big deal. Actually, in meetings with the mental health department, they're amazing. They are excited. They're open to different things. I just wanted to know, was there a meeting? Is there a meeting? And if there is anything upcoming, please include me.
Absolutely. And you know, we did pass the resolution for supporting mental health in the schools. I don't know if you saw that, but it was, what was it, 2 million?
It was 750,000.
Oh, well, it should have been 2 million.
Assigning social workers to the individual schools and the middle school level to help the kids, kind of, obviously, anxiety and all the things that came from homeschooling during COVID. They've been pretty
can
impacted.
I speak to that? I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. No,
I just wanted to know that that mental health put that program in, and
that's,
we have
awesome.
A contract ready to go.
Yeah.
Well, I actually attended a state meeting about mental health in school systems, and one of the ways that they started that meeting was they had a young guy who was recently, he was a high school graduate. He had just graduated high school, and he was a product of the system, and decided to turn his life around and decided that he wanted to help people help kids, because he had social workers and not taking anything from them, but that's usually a solution, but it's not always the solution. So one of the things that surprised me is the state was really, really looking at alternatives, because there's a shortage. So we can say we want social workers, but there's a huge, huge shortage. So mentoring is being looked at more for that, and we have to be careful with that too, because there's a lot going on with mentoring. Especially here, and I'd like to have a more closed room conversation about that. Mm-hmm. But that is another thing that needs to be included in the thought when you're talking social workers, because big on demand and not enough. There's not enough of them. So I mean, it's great to offer mental health, but when we look at the same solutions, it can actually, you know, we might put money into something that's really not going to make a difference.
Right.
It's too scarce to do that.
Right.
So I just want to put that food for thought.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
And I want to remind everybody, it was actually $900,000, not $750,000, because we added money from the opioid settlement to that contract.
Okay.
So it was $900,000.
$750,000
ARPA. $750,000 ARPA, and then the rest is.
Can I just,
yes, please.
Can I just touch on that, what Nina's saying? That's something that's actually fell into our lap at Seeds and Gives. We started a men's group. And we saved 3 lives from suicide in that group setting. And through that group, we discovered what's going on with our youth in the rise, especially in the BIPOC community, the rise in suicide. And now we've started a youth group called Youth Locking Arms, in which now we're using the men that's going through our group setting. As far as advocates, allowing the kids to actually spearhead their own groups, and it's you know, I can't take credit for the science of it. I don't even know if there's a science to it, but I know selfishly it was created for myself because of what I was going through, and we have over 20 to 25 men that's in it, and now we have like maybe about 10 to 15 kids that's in it. So that's something that I've seen just organically that has helped, and I've heard through these individuals, they rather come to our men's locking arms or youth locking arms instead of even going to therapy. So I think
that's
great.
You know, again, creatively
creatively tackling mental health, sometimes these kids just want a safe place to be able to speak, and they don't even want the resolution from somebody like myself who's an adult, right? They want to hear, they just want to know that there's other children going through what they're going through, and there's relatability. So
that's the key
I just
that's
wanted great. To share that.
Yeah, thank you.
Relatability is definitely the key word, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I also have a mentoring group that I'm very quiet about. It's mm-hmm. called MDK Mentoring, My Brother's Keeper, mm-hmm. and it consists of everyone in every color. Mm-hmm. And the most important piece to it is relatability. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, because that actually gets kids to open up.
Right.
Sometimes we even act cool, like we're cool, just to find out what's going on with kids to save them. So it's a very important thing. So hoping that is advocacy and peer support is very, very important.
That's
and
great.
It's a good use of money.
Well, if you have ideas about the youth programming for mental health, just email me and let me know.
Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. All right, I think that's it. No, we're happy to have you here. It's always nice to have new voices come to the table. So any final thoughts, any last concerns?
I just wanted to put it on your radar that I had a conversation with Deputy Executive Kelly today about the CSA project.
Mm-hmm.
At the science staff, we're starting to do research on creating a group of kind of like learning from Kathy's process, honestly,
mm-hmm.
to get multiple voices at the table. So I think the first thing that we'll do is call that group with you and with other legislators that would be interested.
Great. I'm glad to see that.
I assigned Laura Nordstrom to that one.
Great.
And as far as the film interest, Tim Wiedemann and I have been conversing about that.
Great, and I had a chat with Deputy Executive Kelly about that,
great.
Too, so we're going to move that forward.
Perfect.
Excellent. If there's nothing else, I'm going to call for a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Motion.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
Thanks for letting us.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Yes.
That's going to happen.